Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time. Or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is a production of Dirty Mo Media.
Back again on Speed Street. We are in the month of August. We are in the midst of weeks after weeks of IndyCar racing. Thank goodness we just had a full weekend at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. The party about to continue at the Music City, the second running of the Music City GP down there in Nashville coming up this weekend. I'm Joey Molinaro. Thanks for being with us. This is Speed Street. And, of course, the other half of Speed Street is my pal, the driver of the number 20 Bit Nile ride in the NTT IndyCar Series, Connor Daly. What's up, bro?
Not a lot, man. A lot of racing over the weekend. I have not done anything on the social media since the race. So this is the first speaking to anyone of anything on the weekend. Got to save it all for the Speed Street listeners.
Appreciate
because
that.
We care about this community. And Dale Jr. told me that anything that I want to say to people, I should say on the podcast. And that should be then relayed to the folks on social media so they listen. So I'm trying to take some advice from our fearless leader. But yeah, a lot of positives from the weekend. I mean, I'm a little depressed still, but there's a lot of, I mean, weather was perfect. There was a lot of people yep. out there, got to see a lot of, NASCAR racing combined with IndyCar racing, whether or not the NASCAR folks knew that IndyCar was racing or not. It was enjoyable to be out there for, and to see some of the other, the Cup drivers and the Xfinity drivers around, and play a little golf with some of the NASCAR guys as well on Thursday before the Indy GP weekend. And really enjoyed seeing how those guys enjoy life a lot before the race weekends. But yeah, great weekend for motorsport. And yeah, I mean, Joey, you were out there too. I mean, what did you think from enjoying it and taking it all in?
Yeah, man, I was. I echo that. It's always. I mean, we're going to be selfish, right? And selfishly, it is always a blast. I'm never going to turn down the chance to go watch cars run at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, whether it's IndyCar, whether Xfinity, whether it's Cup. So I was there Friday and Saturday. Got to do a two-seater myself on the road course, man. And
I was going to say, yeah.
That is – I did the two-seater at the Oval in May of 2021, the day before the 500. And that is a cakewalk compared to the lap that I did in the road course, on the road course. I mean, I was getting thrown around, beat to heck in there, and I'm going maybe half the speed that you guys are going, and you're doing it for 80-some laps in a field of 26 guys. I just couldn't believe it, man. I mean, we're flying down the straightaway, and then we come up to that braking zone in turn one, and I'm just like, like holding on to my whole body and then getting my head flipped around. And I was really by turn 13, I was like, please don't do another lap. If I do another lap, I'm either shitting myself or I'm blacking out, and I wasn't ready to do that. So
we definitely don't want either of those situations.
No, it was truly a roller coaster, but I mean, my goodness, again, it just like opens up your eyes, my eyes, to how truly difficult and insane it is for what you guys do. But it was really fun. I got to introduce Ben Polizzi to the track. You know, he got behind the whole F-Boy Island star, Ben Polizzi. So I was happy for that. Good to see him out there. But yeah, dude, I think, you know, kind of going back to what I said at the start of this, you know, selfishly, it's always great to be out there. I'm not going to miss it. But the more I was out there, the more, for IndyCar at least, and it was a great crowd, I thought. I've grown in the last year of doing this with you, to where I'm like, we got to go somewhere else.
That's funny you say that. I mean, that's a whole other subject that I saw. There was lots of internet debate about. And first of all, glad your buddy Ben got out to do the two seater F-Boy Island star, which I did watch. I meant to tell you that I did watch the first two episodes of his television program, which it's hard to believe that old buddy's on there. Honestly,
hilarious in the first place.
But I'm stoked for him. That's going to be great. But yes, do we have to go elsewhere? 1,000%. I completely agree that the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for IndyCar is used in the month of May, right? Yep. That's just how it always is. It's how it always has been. And we've been talking for weeks on this show about how we need 20 races, at least 20 races. You know, Graham, we had Graham Rahal on here. We were talking about that with him. A lot of people over the weekend. One of my favorite things has been to hear the people at the track, like, just shout Speed Street and that they're listening to it. You know what I mean? And I'm like, that's really cool. Like, I think that's awesome, because there's a lot of passionate fans out there who care about, I guess, you know, the future of our sport. And so I agree with you about we should go elsewhere, but I also disagree in some senses, because it is a really cool weekend. And like, I love racing in Indy, and it's really one of our best tracks, and we don't have a ton at the moment, but it's one of our best tracks speed wise. And like, being there with NASCAR is awesome. And like, I definitely like it, but I would like it more if we went to other places also, you know what I mean? So like, on a 17 race schedule, it does feel like, yikes, this is a little bit condensed. But you got to also realize that NASCAR does go to the same place twice. You know what I mean? Like, NASCAR has some races that they do go to twice, but they go in like, you know, February, and then they go in October. You know what I mean? So
they also have like 38 races.
Exactly.
You can't even remember it.
Exactly. So I think it would be less diluted for us if we had more races, right? If you had 20, and you know, you could say, oh yeah, well, we're going back to Indy again, which is going to be great. But then we have, you know, Richmond, Kentucky, Nashville, you know, whatever it is. Like, you still got all these other places and markets too. So I definitely know what you're saying, and I see both sides of it, because I love that weekend, because I'm a motorsport fan, right? Like, I love NASCAR. It was great to see, you know, so many different drivers out there. Whether they knew we were racing or not, again, that's a very debatable topic, a very interesting topic that I thought was hilarious most of the time. But like Corey LaJoie, you know, our buddy Corey LaJoie, I'm literally sitting in the car, driver, start your engines, is in about 30 seconds, and he walks over and sticks his head in my cockpit, and he's like, hey, man, it's real tight in there. I'm like, yep, we're going racing here in like 3 minutes. Yeah, he had texted me, where am I? Like, as the national anthem is about to go, and I sent him a picture on the grid. I was like, well, we're going racing, Corey. And I just, you know, when you're doing your own thing and you're focused on your own race that weekend, it is pretty funny to, you know, to then all of a sudden be like, oh yeah, I guess there's other stuff going on too. Cause we're guilty of that as well on race weekends that, you know, that we're with IMSA or whatever it is. But yeah, it was fun to see those guys and fun to see people out there. Cool to see, like, you know, you guys do the two seater stuff, but like William Byron also did the two seater ride as well, which I thought was interesting. I as a driver would never trust getting in a race car with anyone else. But that was really cool to see. So
good to know.
Yeah.
I already took that dive.
Uh-huh. So yeah, so there's a lot.
Can you out the, you mentioned on Twitter, and you kind of mentioned hand around a little bit that there was some NASCAR drivers that you said didn't even know that IndyCar was there. Are we throwing out names, or are we not going to put them under the bus?
We will not throw anyone under the bus, but it was funny because I was playing golf on Thursday for the Chevrolet golf outing. So a lot of the NASCAR guys were there. You had Gregson was there. You had Justin Allgaier there, Daniel Hemric, Tyler Reddick was there. And Tyler Reddick, I can tell he's a big open wheel guy. He definitely pays attention. He was in my pit box after the race. Super good dude. Loved how he played golf because he was getting out there having a wonderful time. He was enjoying life. I tell you what, Tyler Reddick, I like the fact that he's enjoying life and going out and winning on Sundays. But yeah, I talked to Justin Allgaier and I said, it was funny, man. I feel like I've talked to several people in your industry that had no idea that we were also racing with you guys. And he's like, honestly, man, I don't even know where I'm going next weekend. So that's kind of part of the problem. And that's how crazy it is when you have, you know, an absurd amount of races like those guys do. So I get it to a certain extent, but I also, the sad part is I'm like, are you guys really that far above everyone else that like you just don't know that there's another professional automotive racing series racing with you that weekend? Like it's literally marketed as the joint weekend. You know what I mean? Like
to the bricks. Yeah.
That was fascinating to me. I was like, unless they have so many people that are involved or putting out social content and they don't really do it themselves. I don't know, but it was kind of sad because like I, as a racing fan, like whether it was, you know, when I was racing on the Formula One support, you know, weekends and be like, oh, that'd be awesome to see them or whoever else was racing with us or even IndyCar. Like if IMSA's there, like, yeah, I'm probably going to watch a little bit of the IMSA stuff that's going on, but you at least know that it's happening. You know what I mean? And so I wish there was a little bit more of a connection because it is, you know, I like the merging of the series and I like the fact that, you know, we share the weekends, especially because like their cars do cool stuff, but our cars also do cool stuff and we're way faster. So like what, shouldn't there be any type of interest at all? I don't know. It was cool because there is definitely a large group of people that definitely like it, support it, respect it. But it did sort of also feel like IndyCar was there as a support race.
Yeah, we got some questions about that on Twitter, and I figured we would address it here, just like Dale Jr. was saying, we'll address it on the pod, so we're addressing it here. But you mentioned you're a little bummed out from over the weekend. So let's get into the race, the IndyCar race itself. You know, like you said, it was kind of the undercard. It felt like it was the first race of the weekend at IMS itself. We had trucks at IRP on Friday night, which I heard was just fantastic. I mean, it was a huge crowd, entertaining race. Rave reviews there out there at IRP, which is good. But some positives again, you know, qualifying the top 10, you're feeling good going into it. Take us through what happened in your race out there at IMS on Saturday.
Yeah, the IRP stuff was really cool. I mean, to think from Thursday to Sunday, the amount of racing drivers that were in the state of Indiana is wild. You know what I mean? Because you had 28 ARCA cars, you know, 35 trucks. You had 40 Xfinity cars or 38 of them or whatever it is. You got 40 Cup cars, 38 Cup cars, 26 IndyCar drivers. Like if you wanted a driver's autograph, you know, it was pretty much, you could have been in Indiana and might have seen him anywhere, which was cool. But yeah, our weekend, I mean, it was, we knew that was a weekend that we really wanted to take advantage of because we were fast there in May. And again, in qualifying, did exactly what we needed to do. We were quickest in Q1, which was actually one of the most satisfying moments of my season for all the people on the internet that continuously tell me that I suck. Well, I mean, I don't know, when you outqualified Joseph Newgarden and Will Power in Q1, like it's pretty, that's the session where you really have to nail it because you don't want to get knocked out in Q1. And even Will Power came up to you afterwards. He was like, man, that was everything I had on that lap. And I was like, hey, well, that's pretty cool. And the team gave me,
yeah, you laid it down. Yeah.
Yeah. And the team gave me the car to do that. Right. Like it's a team effort. Team gave me a great car. And then going into Q2, there's definitely a lot of interesting remarks afterwards. I had to even delete a tweet because my boss got mad at me. And pretty much everyone seems mad at me after this weekend. I don't really know why. But in Q1, right, to give you an example, we do a set of primary tires, black tires, and then go to the new reds. Boom. That's it. That's the strategy. You make it to Q2, you do the same thing. New set of black tires, maybe a used set of black tires, depending on what your strategy looks like. And then boom, another new set of reds. So you can try to do your best to get into the fast six. And so in that time period, there's like maybe 12 minutes in between when you run in Q1 to Q2. So not really much changes. The conditions don't change much. Things should be pretty consistent. And the only thing that changed for us, you know, didn't make any changes on the car, was a new set of red tires. And when, as a driver, when you go out and you can do a lap like we did in Q1, where it was like, all right, the first push lap, you know, out lap, first lap is the absolute, that's the hammer lap. And we did it. And it's like, all right. But when a lap happens like that and the grip is adequate, everything is right. It's simple. Like it's weird to say, but it's like, that is how everything is supposed to feel. And we're fastest. And so that's like, all right, sweet. So we try to go out and do the same thing for Q2. We obviously want to try to go a little bit quicker. And as soon as I leave the pits, I can feel it's a little bit different. And you do the outlap, you do your two laps, and the balance of the car, nowhere near the same as what we had in Q1. And the only really difference was the tires. Now, again, apparently in motorsport, you can never say anything bad about any of the partners in the sport, but drivers can get criticized all the time. So doesn't really make sense to me, but that's how the business works. No one likes to have to deal with basically constructive criticism, I would say, but I love Firestone. I mean, I've always been a Firestone guy from day one, and Bridgestone. I was on a Bridgestone calendar when I was like 14 in go-karts. So like I've always loved being, being affiliated with them. But like, even, you know, we weren't the only one in this scenario where we had some question marks, right? Colton Herta got out of the car, and Colton Herta, people will listen to because he obviously has more race wins than I do. And so I think he is going to get less flack for speaking his mind than someone who doesn't have race wins, right? So like, I'm very honest with the whole scenario, right? Like, I get it. Totally understand how, I feel like his owner is going to be less upset with him about saying things than my owner with me, because I don't have wins. Winning cures everything, right? So we weren't the only one who dealt with this. I talked to Colton afterwards, and we both went out and felt the car was entirely different. And you're looking for tiny little things, right? If you look at that Q2 session, it was actually one of the most astounding qualifying sessions I think we've had all year, because there were five cars, I think, in the same 10th of a second. Like it was like 61 or 70.1. And it was like 0.10, 0.11, 0.12, 0.13. So like you're fighting for the smallest margin. And it was definitely just a bit of a questionable change for us. So again, only thing that changed was the tires. We talked to Firestone about it. I said, hey guys, this is what was going on. I think Colton said the same thing. We had experienced that a little bit at Road America earlier in the year as well. There's a couple other drivers who have said the same thing to me. So again, don't know what's going on there. We obviously trust Firestone. We'll do everything that they can do for us, because I think still they're one of the best, you know, premier tire partners of any racing series. You know, Pirelli is getting a bunch of crap all the time from Formula One. Goodyear, we got NASCAR. Everyone complains about Goodyear, feels like, all the time. And you know what? There's really not many complaints about Firestone. So if anything, like we just want to have, you know, an equal shot at it, right? Because if it comes down to the tiniest of margins, tenths of a second, you got to have everything perfect. And if there's some variable, it's tough. So that was kind of how qualifying went. We ended up 10th, but we kind of knew, I think, we were a little bit faster than that. But obviously great to see Felix on pole. I thought that was cool. Qualifying in general was a bit of a mix up, right? You had Dixon really struggling again. Kind of the grid was all over the place. Simon Pagenaud starts behind me once again. I can never get away from him at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I'm not sure how or why. But yeah, man, into the race. I mean, I guess to make a long story short, well, I mean, I don't really care to make a long story short, but we were on the right strategy, avoided the first corner, you know, nonsense mess. We were on the primary tires, running sixth. And, you know, when we pitted, well, actually at the beginning of the race, and again, I'm sure that I'll get a bunch of, you know, baloney for trying to be honest about what was going on, but we were struggling with low end power. We had some issues, a bit of a misfire. And again, no fault, no one's at fault, but these things happen. You can't talk about something and just paint a false picture. Like, everyone has to be honest with what's going on here. And if you can't be, well, then what's the point?
We're talking about when you're in the pits, right? Your first pit.
No. I'm talking about as soon as the race started in general. So race start, we were kind of messing around with some stuff electronically to help out. And there was just something off from the beginning. And again, could have been the conditions that affected some things, could have been a lot of different stuff, but all was not normal, we would say. And so when I came into the pits for the first pit stop, I should have thought more about all that was going on. But, you know, Joseph Newgarden was right in front of me. And obviously someone were battling for the top five position. Joseph Newgarden also pitted right in front of me in the pit lane as well. So a lot going on. And the interesting thing about the Indianapolis Grand Prix circuit is that we use a very long first gear. Because we use first gear on the racetrack and we have to have it's a pretty long gear ratio in general because of the straight is so long. And so the having a long first gear means that getting out of the pits is a little bit harder than, let's say, if you had a short first gear. And every time that we come into the pits, no matter what race it is, we are never off full throttle. Like people, it's kind of interesting how that's like, even on the pit speed limiter, you are full throttle. And it's limiting you to 45 miles an hour. Come into the pits, probably back off, go to neutral. But then when you're in the pit box, right, when we're getting our tires changed, we are full throttle, like literally full throttle. And then when the fuel is plugged in, the engine is rev limited, right? So it's not crazy. So basically when you're full throttle, just kind of there, hoping to build a little bit of boost with some of that, some of the RPM of the engine. And then as soon as the fueler pops out of the fuel hole, you're allowed to engage first gear. The electronically you're okay, here we go. So you're looking at the fueler, trying to make sure that you can pull first gear, and then the revs go up to basically, like, I always have the rev limit as high as possible so I can generate that wheel spin to leave the pit lane, right? But also Indianapolis Grand Prix circuit is the highest grip track that we have all year long, right? And so in that pit lane, we also don't have enough power in these Indy cars. Like, I know everyone's talking about the new engines, right? Like, we're in a couple years' time, we're going to hopefully get back to, you know, 900 horsepower, 1,000 horsepower. You know, back in the, you know, kart champ car days and F1 days, you know, those guys, no one's ever going to stall the car because they didn't spin the wheels enough. You know what I mean? It's basically trying to limit how much you spun the wheels. But in this current era, we don't have enough power to spin the wheels at that long of a first gear. So it is my mistake. Like, I'm happy to admit that, you know, when a driver makes a mistake, for sure, because I feel like there's a lot of other areas in the sport where no one wants to admit fault. But like, I mean, if I make a mistake, I mean, what's the point in trying to blame someone else? Like, there's a lot of stuff that was going on that contributed to this, but like, in the end, I am the one that is controlling the clutch paddle on the steering wheel, right? Controlling it. You know, you're looking at it. I never even lift off the throttle. You're full throttle and you're trying to leave the pits and we stall. And so that's that, right? Race is over as soon as that happens. Because you lose a lot of time. You know, the team did a great job refiring me and getting me going, but we went all the way to last place. So really, really tough to accept that. From then on, I was furious just with myself. But you know, we were still fast. Like, that was the crazy thing. You know, we went all the way from, you know, being 25th or 26th, you know, very far behind people, to working our way through people. We were one of the fastest cars on track. We set the second fastest race lap. I mean, we were flying. But obviously once you're behind, that's, you know, it's very hard to work your way forward. And obviously there was only one yellow too. So that also makes things, things quite challenging, but, you know, there was a lot that went on, but you know, our race was over as soon as I stalled it. And again, happy to accept, you know, that mistake, because I feel like this year honestly has been a very mistake free year for me personally. I feel really good about, you know, doing everything that I can in these races, but things are bound to happen. Sometimes these mistakes happen. Sometimes, you know, they can happen at the worst time, which clearly it did, because that was a race where, you know, I really truly believe we should have finished in the top five again.
Yeah.
But yeah, just tough to take overall. And obviously there was a lot that went on in the rest of the race, but yeah, it was, that was a shame for sure.
Tough, no doubt. It was, me and my buddies who I was there with, we were sitting in the grandstand on the front stretch on the inside of the track, and we were following it. So it was definitely a blow for everybody when we saw that happen. Then we kind of bounced around a little bit. But I tell you what, though, man, on a positive note, those mounds out there in turn seven, you know, right there in turn one, I mean, those are absolutely stacked, just packed.
Yeah.
You know, you look down the straightaways, I'm sure you maybe could see, you know, from inside the cockpit there, you know, the stands on the outside of what is turn one and the GP, turn four, the 500 were pretty full. The mounds were pretty full. I mean, it was a raucous, righteous crowd out there, no doubt. And then as negative as it ended up being of a race for you, Alexander Rossi finally breaks through over 1,000 days. We saw all the stats, 3 years, the last time he was in victory lane at Road America in 2019. We have a whole new ride. Yeah, a lot has changed in the series. A lot has changed for Alexander Rossi, but he finally broke through, man, and put it all together and got that P1.
Yeah, really happy for Alex, honestly. Just great for him in general. I know it's been a bit of a tough go for him in this AeroScreen era of IndyCar. But yeah, I mean, obviously the guy has never forgot how to drive, right? Like the guys don't forget how to drive. So, you know, it's just a matter of putting all the pieces together on the right day. And even Christian Lundgaard as well. Great. Lundgaardner Smith-Steenville. He had a great race. You know, good for him. You know, he's a quick young guy for sure. And obviously the Ray Hall team had some good pace at the Indy GP circuit. But yeah, it was, you know, overall, you know, a pretty good race. It seems like tough to overtake at times, but I'm impressed that you didn't ask about Devlin yet. But I
wanted to leave that to you, man. I didn't really know how to bring it up, but now that you did bring it up, let's talk about it. We have the the clip that goes, you know, on the internet viral. Connor Daly absolutely just letting them have it on the radio. Take us through it.
Well, there's a lot that happens here, right? Like there's a lot that was an overflow from Iowa. And Iowa, I was side by side with Devlin a couple times. And if I don't back out of a scenario, we both crash. And it's a shame because Devlin, I watched Devlin grow up. Like I've known his dad for forever. His dad is an incredible guy. And like, it pains me to have to like, to say anything about him, because it sucks, but this is the era that we're in right now. And like, you are at the top level of IndyCar, but to be honest, like you gotta be smarter. And like, I think a lot of people question how he got here, right? There's no way around it, but like, you didn't win the Road to Indy Championships. You didn't win much. You did. We all know why, you know, you got there, and that happens, right? Like that happens with multiple drivers before, but it's tough because if you come in as a rookie and you respect the process and you get in there and you learn and you're not in a bunch of compromising situations, you know, he's been in multiple different accidents this year where I've seen, and it just looks like they can be avoided. Like if you're a rookie, the goal is to learn as much as you can.
Stay clean,
but also like, don't make everyone your enemy when you're a rookie, I feel like. And there are many drivers who will not say things publicly. Obviously I have a podcast, so I can say whatever I want now, but it's just, it's tough because in that scenario, I like when I had said that, I had just watched Devlin almost wreck four other people. And it might have been partially, you know, partially on them, might have been partially on him. But there was a lot that was going on in that scenario when I had caught that group of cars. And again, we were quite a considerable amount faster than some of those cars. But the reason I even got to Devlin in the first place was because there was a whole kerfuffling of cars and people were off the track. And I had got past two guys already because they almost got knocked off the track as well in a whole different scenario. So it's a matter of understanding when and when not to drive absolutely desperate, right? Like I knew that passing him on the outside of where I was going to be was hard, but that's why I broke way later than he did. And I was going to make the corner fine. But again, when you drive your car into a corner like that and basically just drive into the other competitor, make contact and force you off the road. I shut my phone off after the race. Didn't care. Don't care what people have to say. But eventually you see a couple comments like, if that were in Formula One, that driver gets penalized. Like we've seen it already. We've seen it in Formula One. You push a guy off the track. That's a penalty. I'm sorry. It is a penalty. And, you know, we've seen him get penalized this year already. And again, I should not have been back there in the first place, right? I made the mistake to be back there in the first place, right? So again, it's on me that I had to work my way past these guys again. But, and I talked with another driver about this as well, because he thinks along the same lines as I do, but I won't name him obviously because, you know, no one wants to be public, whatever it is. But there's knowing when and when you probably need to give it up, right? Devlin might have lost more defending for his life, or like sometimes you could lose more on track for defending everything you've got for your life, if your life depends on it. The funny thing is, like when you race up front with some of these guys and you make a move on some of the guys up front, it's less difficult than some of the folks in the middle or the back or whatever happens, because like they think long term in the race, right? And that it was just such an annoying scenario, because I had just passed like six cars in a row, working our way through. I had to burn a bunch of overtake to get by, to get by Devlin, and then just get driven off the track. And there's no penalties, obviously. I mean, IndyCar officiating, it is what it is. I then got penalized for blocking later in the race, which is a whole different subject. The Devlin thing, you know what? I appreciate his family. I like his dad a lot. I do think he needs to understand at a higher level what he's doing. I just think there's a scenario where if you've got some speed, you're with a great team. Devlin's engineer is one of my favorite people on the planet. I think he's an incredibly talented engineer, and obviously the Andretti team's a great team. But like, there's something going on there, and I wish that I could. I'm going to talk to him when I see him in Nashville. I'll be like, hey man, like, what do you think about this? You know what I mean? Like, happy to talk to him. But I've obviously got my, you know, I've obviously got things that I, you know, I shouldn't have been back there in the first place. So that was on me. No, go ahead.
Continue. I want you to finish up before I get this in here.
No, later on in the race, I mean, just when it comes to the officiating side again, I got penalized late in the race for blocking Grosjean, and I never blocked Grosjean. Like I find it hysterical that this happened. And it was not a big penalty. I just had to give him the position, but still every position counts in this sport. And I just find it funny that people can get driven off the track. There's contact, there's blocking all over the place, swerving to block people into the grass. And I make one half a car length move to the middle of the track, and Grosjean doesn't even try to pass me, and I have to give him the position. And I get a voice message from Grosjean after the race. And this, I will have a meeting with the stewards in Nashville. Again, don't dispute the penalty. Don't care that it happened now, because obviously you can't change the past. But I would like to understand the rules for the future, right? Because the Grosjean sends me a voice message. He says, hey, man, I have no idea why they told you to let me by. Like, I don't. It's weird. Like, I don't think there was, I didn't think you were blocking at all. And so if another driver says that to you, I look forward to the meeting with the stewards where I can understand what's legal and what's not, because I've done way worse blocks all year long. Like, I've done some really aggressive blocking that is 1,000% like potentially against the rules, no penalties. But in this case where like I barely make a move, now it's blocking. So it's important for us to know, because what if that's for first and second? What if that's for second or third, a major position in a major event? I just wish there was a little bit more consistency. So that's all. And again, love that our officials are making calls, and love that there are rules. But I plan to have a meeting with them and understand them at a higher level, maybe. So yeah, a lot went on in that race overall. It was literally the messiest race I think I've had in like 10 years, just of everything that happens. And I think everyone hated everyone afterwards. It seemed like, I mean, there were so many comments that were made about like me and from my, like, I just, there was just a lot that like, and again, I was accepting responsibility for everything that happened. Obviously it is what it is, but there's just a lot that went on, and I just can't wait to get rid of that whole weekend in general.
So do you really think Devlin should be kicked out?
I mean, I wish there was a, it's funny. I explained this to someone today in IndyCar, right? We've got some of the best drivers in the world, right? But I think there's always one or two people where you're just like, I don't know. And I'm not, you know, not going to discredit anything that, you know, some of the drivers have done for sure. But, and there's, it's like that in all motor racing series across the planet, really. Even in Formula One, I think there, you'd ask some people, they're like, I don't know if that person really, I don't know. We'll see what happens. But, I don't think he's going to get kicked out of the series. Obviously, I don't think he should get kicked out of the series. That was an aggressive thing to say. But I've avoided all aggressive things to say all year long. I have more things like that I've said, that I get in trouble for, but of course this one seems to be a major one. And I don't really care. Honestly, I'm glad that I said it. I've had a problem with it, and everyone can thank, you're welcome to IndyCar for a social clip and IndyCar and NBC for a social clip. You're welcome. I'm glad someone's saying something.
Well, you may not have to worry about it too much longer. Silly season reports over the last week, you know, updated here. Apparently, there's some looking going on for the 29 car. Apparently, they're not totally sold on old D double D there. So maybe what you said was, you know, predicting the future a little bit. The 29 ride may be up for grabs. I don't know if you saw
that. I don't know, man. It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, there's a lot. I read an article as well, you know, about Renus, my teammate. You know, he's now free to speak with other teams and talk to people. So, you know, the whole silly season thing is definitely going to be interesting. And I'm excited to see what happens, honestly, just in general. But, you know, either way, it's going to be the next couple months are going to be interesting for a lot of teams, a lot of drivers. And again, a lot of this stuff, I hope people can listen to this episode and make sure to take all everything in context, which I'm sure some stuff will be taken out of context, but who cares? We got a great podcast to listen to, and I hope people appreciate the honesty, because again, there's a lot of stuff that I could say, I promise you. And there's a lot of people that share the same opinions that I do on a lot of things, but you'll never hear from them on it. So it's just funny. I'll keep trying to keep my job while also, you know, working on making sure our fan base gets deeper into the streets.
That's good. We appreciate that. We really do. I think we all do. Yeah. So, I mean, there's rumors about 29 being up for grabs. Junko's Hollander comes in. They snag Callum Ilott, because I know he was a name that was kind of circling around, people interested in him, and they lock him up to a multi-year deal to stay in that ride. Then, of course, again, this is 3 or 4 weeks in a row, the gift that keeps on giving, Alex Palou and the drama with Chip Ganassi Racing. Now Alex Palou's going back saying, hey, we're going federal on your ass. This is defamation on me. And as IndyCar turns, man, they need to be the people's court. We need to just have Roger and Chip and Alex Palou come out and have that thing planned, figure it out that way. But I mean, I still just can't believe that a driver that is actively driving and not just bombing totally, you know, when it comes to qualifying or his race results, because of all that's going on behind the scenes and off track with this guy.
It's wild, man. It's wild to see. And I sat down. I don't really talk to Alex Palou a lot, to be honest. We're very different people, but I like the guy. I respect him. But I every time the last two autograph sessions at the last two events, I just look at him every time. I said, "Hey, man, I would love to have a conversation with you." I look at him. I'm like, "Well, I would love to just have a chat maybe sometime." And I looked at him at the Indy GP autograph session. I said, "Hey, man, I see what's going on here. I still want to have that conversation with you." And he's just kind of looking at me, smiling like, "Oh yeah, we can have a talk sometime." And I'm like, "But one thing I got to tell you right now is your management should be put on a boat and sent out to sea and just never see him again." And he's just like, again, he can't say anything. Obviously he's just like, "Oh, someday we will have a conversation." And I'm like, "All right, I'm sure there's more going on, but you know, beneath the sheets, as they say." But like, man, it seems like it's a tough program to be a part of right now.
Yeah, dude, definitely. And I want to ask you about this too, from your perspective in the paddock and mentioned with other drivers, whether it's drivers' meetings, the autograph sessions, like you said, because whenever I see Alex Palou out at the track now with all this stuff going on, like when I saw him over the weekend. I don't know if it's just because, you know, we all know the situation and so we're thinking about it, but there's just this sort of loneliness. There's this sort of pariah feel around him. And again, it's not all his fault at all, right? With management and everything going on, making those different decisions. But for the drivers, is there a sense of that with him? Like, is there like people are trying to not get that bad juju, kind of stay out of the mess from him?
No. I think everyone's pretty cool with Alex, honestly. Like, he, you know, just seeing from who he communicates with at the autograph sessions and stuff like that. Because, again, like, and I told him, like, in the end, I'm team driver. Whatever it is, like, whatever's going on here, like, I said, I'm team driver here because I know that there's many scenarios where drivers, you know, drivers are the little man here when it comes to big race team organizations. And there's definitely been a lot of drivers who've been, you know, unfairly treated by teams in the past, right? It's just kind of the nature of the beast. And, you know, again, not saying this is, I don't know the details of the situation, right? This is purely speculation, but I told Alex, "Hey man, like, I'm on the driver's side here. Cause I know that, you know, it's like why we, you know, we want to have like a driver's association, like a union type thing, right? Like, cause we want some of those, you know, benefits and people to stand up for us in situations as well." But yeah, I think for the most part, you know, the guys are, you know, we don't know what's going on. It's hard to ask questions about it, right? Cause you can't just be like, "Hey man, tell me about your federal lawsuit." You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's just, pretty it's a bit of a subject. a bit of a weird thing to talk to, but again, I think he's doing a great job. Obviously, like, he's a quick driver. There's no doubt about it. And he's got an IndyCar championship under his belt already. So again, he's not worried about the future because people know that, you know, you're a proven talent, you're a winner. And that's really nice to have on your side.
Yeah. And I thought it was really interesting too, last week, kind of towards the end of the week when they had the media bullpens and everything Thursday, Friday, it felt like really a few of the questions that we had were answered by Alex. He kind of came out and said, "Yeah, I'm going to be with McLaren next year, part of the McLaren family." And the legal team for him, when that statement to Jenna Fryer or whoever they made the statement to, it might have just been public, you know, they kind of condemned Chip Ganassi for, you know, trying to ruin Alex Palou's chances in F1. So it's like, okay, one, we know that he says he's going to be McLaren next year, and, you know, death to us apart there. And two, the tie in there with McLaren is that he was gunning for a Formula One spot.
See, that didn't come from McLaren directly. That came from Alex's management, right? So, like, again, I think that's lunacy to think that you're going to be in F1 next year or in the next 2 years. I don't know those conversations, but again, knowing how many drivers are signed to McLaren, knowing how many, like knowing that they have Ricciardo, Norris, they've got Pato around, they're talking about Oscar Piastri as well, which is like someone that, you know, Alpine thinks that they can sign also. You know, there's just, maybe there is some wild, you know, situation where they think, yeah, F1 is the move. But it's like, I don't see that happening. And I think a lot of people who think logically are like, look, I love that maybe McLaren dangles that little F1 test carrot out in front of you, but I don't know if they, first of all, I would actually love it for IndyCar if they thought, boom, we're going to get our next drivers from the IndyCar series. You know what I mean? Love that for us, but I don't see it. I just don't see it happening. So that, again, that was another interesting statement. Every time someone releases a statement or something happens, I mean, it's strap me in my seat because I'm ready to read this sucker. And I it's hilarious.
I'm like, yeah, I know they have to, but I'm kind of like, stop with the statements. You're digging a deeper grave. Cut it out, you know?
But man, at some point, like, we're going to get a legal expert on this podcast or something and just be like, hey, is this the right move? Like, what do we got to do here? How does this work? Like, because there's so much that goes on behind the scenes that, again, people will never know, right? Like, whatever is released to the public is a very, very, like, surface level what's happening. Because sure. Yeah. I can promise you, even in any type of, like, negotiations for contracts or when people talk about all these silly season articles, you know, there's – the silly season article is very much surface level. Like there's, you know, some people that get interviewed, I'm sure get a little deeper, but man, there's a lot that goes on beneath the surface that just a lot of people will never know. The public might never know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a ton going on off the track, ton with, you know, dramatics, with contracts, with legalities, but we're keeping this party going. Like I said off the top, we've had, what, 4 straight weeks of racing now. This is going to be the 5th straight week before you get a week off next weekend before you head out to East St. Louis. And you're heading to Nashville, the 2nd Music City GP. It's going to be hotter than Hades. It is going to be a party. It is going to be bumpy. You're going over a bridge. What are we looking forward to? What are we not looking forward to for the second running here?
Well, I mean, Nashville, there's a few things that I think the track has done to help it a little bit, which will be great. But I mean, it's just going to be a fun event in general. I mean, I'm a little bit concerned about, you know, what, you know, the heat is going to do for us. I'm just kind of going into it with a very open mind and be like, hey, you know what, whatever happens, happens. Cause at this point, you know, I just want to get out on the track again. I know we've struggled on street courses for sure. But with what happened last year, seeing Marcus fly through the air and win the race, it's kind of going to be one of those things where it's like, anything might happen here. So, we're going to try our best to put ourselves in a position to be successful, but definitely just looking forward to the event, you know, year two, what was improved after year one, you know what I mean? A new street course race, there's always a few bumps in the road that you got to fix literally and off track as well. But yeah, great event. I'm sure there's going to be a ton of people there yet again. I mean, it's just Nashville in general. There are going to be people there. But yeah, super pumped for it.
I'm so pissed I can't be there.
Like, that is tough. That is tough. But you know what?
So fun last year. There's nothing, folks, let me tell you. There is nothing like sitting on a rooftop of a bar in Nashville on Broadway while the cars are practicing. Going around, you hear the Indy cars in the background. You got a little country to your left down Broadway. You're having a beverage. It's 90,000
degrees. Having a bevy in there.
But you hear the cars going. You look out off the rooftop. I mean, it's truly heaven on earth. So if you haven't been down there, I suggest getting to the Music City GP and make it up for me because I got to be on baby watch here, which is fair. I'm excited for the boy, but also pissed that I can't go.
Hey, baby watch is important. There will be more Nashville Grand Prix. It truly is. You know, it truly is going to be a recurring event. But yeah, man, just pumped about it in general. I wanted to get back a little bit to NASCAR real quick from Indy because I thought it was a great race.
Crazy.
I thought we cover all forms of motorsport here. Formula One, Ferrari made a fool of themselves, which is wild. But the NASCAR race in general, I you know, seeing AJ Allmendinger win on Saturday, awesome. Love when AJ Allmendinger wins. Great friend of mine. That was fantastic. And then, yeah, the race on Sunday, you had a lot of really interesting stuff happen there. People seemed like there were some brake failures with Kyle Larson, it looked like. That was insane. That was a massive hit. You never like to see brake failures. But Tyler Reddick had that race locked in the whole way. I mean, and I like Tyler a lot. After speaking to him a little bit over the weekend, Tyler's a dude, and I like that. I think he's a good human being, and he's a very talented race car driver. Because the funny thing is, we're talking a little bit. Three Chi, yeah, there you go. Exactly. You did some content with old buddy there over the weekend. That looked like a good time. But yeah, he's one of those guys that like. There was I must have done. They let him do some simulator time in the IndyCar at Road America or whatever. He's like, man, I could not get anywhere near your lap time at Road America in the IndyCar. And I was like, well, that's kind of funny. I was like, that's really random. But he's like, after the Indy GP race, like I had worn a hole through my elbows, my left elbow of the suit. Like it's a hard race to do. He's like, man, I have no idea how you guys do it. And I was like, well, I appreciate that, man. Like, that's cool that you respect that. I'd say it's a different craft for sure. It's a little bit of a, you know, different wheelhouse, but yeah, great race in general. The last couple restarts, it was, there was a certain, let's say I had a fantasy lineup of NASCAR drivers in the top three. If it was Reddick, Elliott, and Allmendinger, it was going to be a great day for me. And obviously that didn't happen because there's always a yellow with four to go in NASCAR, always a yellow. And yeah, that mixed things up a lot. Chastain almost ruined Tyler Reddick's day, I feel like, which was crazy. Him driving through the cutoff in the track and still racing Tyler like he was racing for the win. I thought that could have gone awfully for a second. I was looking at that and I was like, oh, yikes. But yeah,
it was kind of similar. I felt like, now I think about it, like, you know, you have the Indy 500 and then you have the Brickyard, right, for NASCAR. And, you know, this past Indy 500, we saw Marcus Ericsson really had it on lock until that red flag's thrown. And then he's got to battle his balls off to hold off Pato O'Ward, and he does it. And then I felt the same way for Tyler Reddick. You know, I mean, he was pole. He was driving his balls off, man. He had it locked up. And then all that craziness that's going on behind him that you mentioned very easily could have had something just go wrong enough to bump him away. And he held on time and time again. So I thought it was a little interesting that in the same year, you know, we had those two big events and the guy who ended up winning is somebody that, man, they almost seemed like they were giving everybody a chance to try to knock him off. And they held on, which was impressive.
Yeah. And there was a lot of questionable racing out there though, too. I think there's some of that stuff again is very NASCAR. And I thought it was very interesting that Brad Keselowski, I saw him say something, or one of the drivers said something today about like, he thinks NASCAR should start handing out more penalties for things like whether it's driving infractions or whatever. And I almost agree because like, I love NASCAR racing and I love a little bit of, you know, contact here and there, but like I saw Joey Logano like hit like five people and I'm like, was that really necessary? Like, I was like, I don't know how, like, and it worked for, I mean, to be fair, it worked for him. He passed a lot of people because they all crashed outside of him.
That's what got Blaney and Elliott, right?
Yeah. Well, that was Cindric, I think. Cindric, again, I get used a little love tap into Suarez, into Allmendinger. And again, it works for those guys because, again, Cindric finished second and he restarted like eighth. You know what I mean? So, like, it works, but it is a shame because I know as a driver, you work so hard to get to that position. And if you just get hit out of the way, or if me and Devlin scenario, like I just worked my butt off to pass like six guys. And then you drive me off track because you're just desperate and I'm going to pass you again in a lap anyway, but you just held everyone up in that line for another 10 seconds. There's no point in doing that. Like you probably would have lost Devlin. The funny thing, to go back to this really quickly, I'm not butthurt about this at all. Devlin lost more time by pushing me into the grass and lost more positions than if he would have just understood that I'm way faster and that, you know what, I'm going to slide in behind here and not lose positions to Callum, who is behind us, and another car who is behind us. Who would have thought that might have been efficient? But no, that can't happen. So anyway, that's there. You know, the NASCAR thing, I would find it interesting if they started penalizing some drivers for maybe some, you know, contact stuff, but I don't see it happening. I think it's very, very NASCAR. But yeah, great. I think it's a great race. There was a couple moments in that race where I think it was like, I don't know if I wish the racing was a little bit closer. You know what I mean? It seemed like people weren't quite as close as I bet some NASCAR fans would like for road racing. But I have to think it was a successful event, and I enjoyed watching the restarts. I enjoyed watching the race. I will say that.
Yeah, no, I did too. Even got my sister and her husband to watch some, which is a real rare feat there. So we're spreading the motorsport word out here. Definitely trying to do our best with it. I'll pull up the ratings because we hit the 1 mil mark. CD's 1 mil mark, as we talked about a few episodes ago, from Adam Stern. Motorsports viewership this past weekend, NASCAR Cup. Got a 205, which is 3.3 million viewers. F1 got a 0.63, 1.2 million viewers. And then IndyCar, 0.67, which is a little over 1 million viewers. So good to be back over that mark, right? Magic number. You'd think going to Nashville again with that kind of race that we had last year and all the pub for it, that maybe we get the same thing. I don't know. We hope. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, I mean, The ratings thing was not, you know, to get over 1 million viewers is good. I think there's still, I mean, it's still frustrating to understand where the rest of those people are, you know what I mean? And how we're not getting to that point. But again, it's all marketing. We get it. But NBC did a great job. And again, during the NASCAR race as well on Sunday, which was again on network NBC, you know, a lot of talk about IndyCar, which I think is great. So it's definitely not an NBC problem. I don't think it's definitely not, you know, NBC is definitely trying to spread the love for motorsport in general. And, you know, a lot of great, you know, great ads for the Nashville race again next weekend. So hopefully we can bring some great momentum there. But yeah, good to see that number. And again, a race on Saturday, right? Saturday midday, you know, the Saturday race at Iowa was the better rating as well. Again, both races didn't have to go up against NASCAR.
I get Cup. Yep.
Exactly. Can't go against Cup. We know people are definitely passionate about that. But yeah, man, just, you know, a good weekend for motorsport, I think, in general. And, you know, and it's just nice to kind of keep that momentum rolling to Nashville. I think everyone's excited for a week off, honestly. Like, I know I'm excited for a week off. But yeah, I mean, we're, you know, just had Sunday off, Monday off. I didn't even go to the NASCAR race. Honestly, I just watched it at home. I couldn't be bothered to go to the racetrack, but I had a great time Sunday, relaxing, watching it. And then, you know, go to the simulator tomorrow for us and Charlotte, get down to Nashville Thursday, playing some ping pong tournaments. And yeah, it's going to be really interesting, I think.
Yeah, we got a little bit of breaking. I don't know if it's breaking news. Let's see when this tweet was sent out. Yeah, it was at 9 a.m. this morning. My dog is just being a pain in the ass, so I apologize. But it was at 9 a.m. this morning from Nathan Brown. For the first time in 7 years, an American driver will hop in an F1 car for a session during an official race weekend. Williams Racing announces it will have F2 driver Logan Sargeant run FP1 during the USGP at COTA in October. So that's exciting, interesting.
Yeah, it's awesome. I great for, you know, American Formula One fans, I think. I don't know Logan, but I know how hard it is to get to that point. You know, we were very, very close to having a couple FP1 outings myself with Force India back in 12 and 13. And then 14 if I would have won the GP3 championship. But yeah, it's a really cool feeling to get to be, you know, in an F1 car, I'm sure, for, you know, for a session, any session, because it's a lot of attention and it's a great opportunity. So especially in the States, I really hope American Formula One fans, you know, or American Netflix fans, do get behind our next American guy, you know, whoever that is, whether it's Colton Herta, whether it's Logan Sargeant, you know, I hope Logan gets a fair shot at it, right? He's clearly an F2 race winner, which is really cool. And, you know, as I've said this, I think, for a long time, I'll support any American who gets into Formula One, right? It's got to be the right guy. We got to have someone that makes us look good, makes us look, like we're not like we can do it. And I do think there are guys out there that can. So cool for Logan. I hope to get to interact with him at some point. But I know a lot of, you know, Kyle Kirkwood knows him really well. A lot of other folks that I know him really well, which is cool. And Williams is, you know, obviously right now, probably the slowest team on the grid, maybe the slowest team, but we respect Williams. My dad drove for Williams. So I always have a love for Williams Formula One in my heart. That's going to be great. Great for the U.S. Formula One fan. I'm actually probably going to go to COTA. So I hope to be there to witness that type of activity.
I got the invite down there too. So maybe I will, if my boy is cooperating and my wife will let me go. So Formula One down there in October, which would be exciting. I mean, yeah, how can you ask for a better American driver name to go into an international series? Like Sargent? Are you kidding me? Sargent, the American driver. That's sick.
I know. I do like it. It's very fitting. You know, Joe, you're more of a celebrity than me, so you might get down to F1 a little bit easier than I will, but we'll see what happens. Maybe we can share an Airbnb because it's a respectful environment down there. But Logan Sargent. I mean, there's definitely something about that rings out with freedom, and I respect that.
Same here, man.
We salute him.
Good. Salute the Sarge for the news coming up in October. Packed show here. We've covered a lot, gone over everything because you've been listening, so I'm not going to recap. But a reminder that you can also watch us on YouTube, Dirty Mo Media's YouTube channel. Go there, subscribe. Comes out about a day after the audio comes out. So we're recording actually on Tuesday this week because Connor's got to hit the cinema on Wednesday before Nashville. So we're getting in a day early. But you can watch us on YouTube as well and see my dog running around and me holding up my cat because I live in a freaking zoo. But neither here nor there. Let's wrap up with a Ricky Treadway random Indy 500 driver of the week.
Yes, we do have a Ricky Treadway random Indy 500 driver of the week. It's funny. Someone sent me a message about the Ricky Treadway random Indy 500 driver, and they were like, oh, you should do Tim Richmond. And I was like, that's not random at all. Like, everyone knows Tim Richmond. Like, we're trying to get
not the point of the segment.
Yeah, we're trying to get to drivers that I've never heard of, maybe that I should know. Everyone knows Tim Richmond. So we all know the story of old Timmy Richmond. And I appreciate someone reaching out and making me aware of that. But I went to the 1966 Indianapolis 500, 1966 Indianapolis 500.
Ultra Stein.
Huh?
Tumultuous times in the country, 60s.
In the 60s, yes, right. Indeed. Yeah. Graham Hill was the winner. Graham Hill first, Jimmy Clark second, two absolutely legendary names, not from America. But they're really like just – it's really cool to see some of the names in these years. I'm very curious to see in 30 years from now if you look back at the 2022 Indy 500, if you kind of say the same thing about – you know, some of the drivers that you see in this race, there's guys
I think about that too. Yeah.
You know, Mario Andretti, Al Unser, Bobby Unser, you got Gordon Johncock, Graham Hill, AJ Foyt, Dan Gurney, like Cale Yarborough, like all these guys, you're like, oh yep. Know every single one of those names, but we're going with a man who finished 29th. His name is Arnie Knepper. Arnie Knepper is from Illinois, Belleville, Illinois. He did how many Indy 500s here? He tried to qualify for, looks like one, two, three,
four.
Tried to qualify for 8 Indy 500s, only made five of them. I find this, there's a fun fact here on the Wikipedia. Knepper, if I hope that's how you pronounce it, earned a small place in Indianapolis lore when he crashed on the 87th lap of the 1969 Indianapolis 500. Instead of making the typical dash to trackside safety, stood up in his car facing 180 mile an hour oncoming traffic and frantically waved his arms to warn oncoming drivers of the danger. So you got to respect Arnie for getting out there and waving his hands.
Real selfless guy, Arnie. He just...
Yeah.
base that speed. I wouldn't suggest that you do that, Connor, if you ever crash again at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway during the 500.
Yeah, so Arnie Nepper, poor guy died of cancer, 92. But Arnie, we respect your career, and we learned about you today. And now we know more about Arnie Nepper.
There was some controversy in that year, apparently, too. So it says fourth place Gordon Johncock is also theorized by some observers to have actually been the rightful winner of the race. Johncock completed the 500 miles in less elapsed time than Hill Clark and third place Jim McElreath. However, Johncock suffered minor damage during the first lap accident and restarted the race in the pit lane due to the crew, the nose cone. They didn't score his first lap out of the pit lane, so he effectively ran all day carrying one lap penalty to the field. So, got a little almost 0-2 vibe, you know, some controversy there on who thinks who won the race, but it goes down in the record books as Graham Hill. It was a rookie, I believe.
I don't know, but I know Graham Hill. He's a legend. You might not know him, Joey, but Graham Hill is a legend.
Now I do. Mario Andretti was the pole sitter that day, 3 years before Mario won his. All right, Arnie Nepper. Good. Thanks, Connor. Okay, so you're ahead to the sim. Then you're going down to play some ping pong with Joseph and get ready for the weekend in Nashville. Everybody going down there, have a great time. Stay cool. Trust me, last year I was freaking dying by the time it got to Sunday. I couldn't even look at a bottle of beer because I was just so down and out. But entertaining weekend, fun weekend. Be sure to follow us, download, leave us a rating, review, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts on audio platforms. Again, we're on Dirty Mo Media's YouTube channel. You can also follow us on social media at Twitter, Instagram. Love interacting with you guys there at Speed Street Pod. Holding out for some possible merch here coming, the Speed Street merch. So be on the lookout for that. Of course, say hi to Connor. Chat him up this weekend if you see him. And Connor, you got anything else?
I don't. We're going to try to bounce back here pretty aggressively this weekend, and be sure to watch the race on the Big Bird. It's on NBC. I still find people complaining on the internet that IndyCar can't be found. There's no excuses for that. It can definitely be found. It's not only on Peacock. There was one race that was on Peacock. Let's get over it. We understand it. We're moving on to the next one.
Yep. And this one is on the Big Bird Sunday in Nashville. For the second time. All right. This has been an episode of Speed Street, another episode of Speed Street. We appreciate you guys, and we will talk to you next week, the off week for IndyCar on Speed Street.
Check out Dirty Mo Media on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Dirty Mo.